The Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, Episode 40. Philadelphia is a city of many firsts, including the country's first stock exchange, the first hospital, the first university, and the first zoo. Hey everyone, and welcome back to another edition of the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast. A few episodes back, Heather and I did a show in which we each revealed our top 10 places that we had traveled to and the top 10 places we wanted to travel to, and it was a huge hit. So we're back at it again, this time revealing our top 10 accommodations, top 10 foods we've eaten, and our top 10 travel experiences. But before we get into the episode, I want podcast listeners to be the first ones to know about a special project I've been working on over the last few months. It stems from the fact that every day I get asked by readers how I'm able to live the life that I do, traveling wherever I want, working for myself, and ultimately living life on my own terms. People want to break free of their 9-to-5 and travel and work from anywhere in the world. But of course, it's scary, it's hard, and you don't know how to do it. And I get that because when I started this journey, I didn't know how either. I made lots of mistakes and it was anything but easy. There was no roadmap to follow. So I decided to create one. I rounded up some of the world's foremost experts on traveling cheaply, creating location-independent lifestyles, and living abroad on a reasonable budget. People that I know and trust, some of which you've heard on this podcast, and got them to commit to helping more people find their dream lifestyle. The result is the Paradise Pack, which is a bundle of 15 of the world's best resources. It includes courses on everything from finding cheap accommodations anywhere in the world to creating and launching your own business, as well as memberships to exclusive sites like Digital Nomad Academy, a small community of people living, thriving, and helping each other become location independent. What's most amazing is that the value of the products is over $1,000 if you purchase them separately. But I've been granted special permission from everyone to sell all these products as a bundle for only $97 total. The sale will only last for 72 hours and then it's gone. So if you're interested, you can head over to theparadisepack.com and enter your email. We'll send you a notification when the sale begins so that you can check it for yourself and not miss that 72-hour window. I am really, truly excited about this amazing project, and I can't wait to hear some of the amazing success stories that come about because of the Paradise Pack. All right, now let's jump into this week's episode. And after you're done listening, don't forget to leave a comment on the show notes letting us know your top 5 accommodations, foods, and travel experiences. We want to hear from you. Hello, travel nerds, and welcome to the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, the show that teaches you how to travel more while spending less. I'm Trav, the creator of Extra Pack of Peanuts, and with me today is the person everyone has been clamoring to have back on the show, the person who takes all the good photos that show up on the Extra Pack of Peanuts site, and who always has a Tide to Go stick ready when I get stains on my clothes, my wife, Heather. Hey, Heath, thanks for coming on again.
I'm excited to be here.
I'm actually a little worried because a few episodes ago, we did a show where we each listed our top 5 places we had been and our top 5 places that we wanted to go, and everyone loved it so much that I'm a little worried you're going to be taking my job here as the host of the Extra Pack of Peanuts podcast, and I'll be kicked to the curb.
Well, I don't mind coming on, but I think hosting is definitely a talent that should be reserved just for you.
And the show was a huge hit with you guys, with the listeners. And during that show, I asked people to tell us their top 5 places they had been to and the top 5 places that they wanted to go. And we were overwhelmed with responses. Over 40 people left comments on the show notes. They've really got into it, explained their choices, and in the process, certainly filled me with even more wanderlust. So for today's show, Heather and I are once again going to reveal some of our top 5s. But we're going to stretch it to 3 different lists this time. We're going to talk about the top 5 accommodations we've ever stayed at, followed by the top 5 foods we've ever eaten, and then ending with the top five travel experiences we've had. And of course, once again, we'd love to hear from you as well. So make sure to hop on over to the show notes of this episode, number 40, and let us know your top five accommodations, your top five foods, and your top five travel experiences. So as always, ladies first. So Heth, start us off. But before listing our top five accommodations, why not give listeners a little glimpse into our travel history by listing a few of the worst accommodations you've stayed in?
Well, I will start with one of our first trips that we took, a backpacking trip, and that was in Thailand and Malaysia. And our close friends and family, I'm sure, know exactly what I'm talking about, as we've told this story many times. But we arrived in Thailand, in Chiang Mai, and we checked into the Mojito House Hostel. It was a whopping $4, I think, a night. And it was everything you would expect a $4 a night room to cost. We got a private room where we had to climb up the stairs to a landing, which was actually the dorm room. Yes, the landing of the stairs. People were camping out with their sleeping bags, just hanging out. So we walked over them to go up the final flight of stairs to our private room, which had mattresses with the springs poking out, a private shower that included a bucket, and a hose that actually ended up not working anyway. So that was one of the worst for sure.
Yeah, I will agree. The Mojito House would be on my list of worst accommodations. As Heather said, springs were actually popping out of the bed. So we talk about that. You see that on cartoons and stuff. That was actually happening in our deluxe private room in the Mojito House in Thailand.
And another seriously terrible experience was in Malaysia, in Penang. We decided that we would stay in an actual hotel as our splurge for the end of this trip. So we check in and we walk into the room. There is mold on the walls in the bathroom, watermarks on the ceiling, and peeling wallpaper in the bedroom. Okay, maybe not so bad. I'm thinking, keep it together. I've already melted down a few times on this trip, including the time at the Mojito House. Maybe it's not so bad. So I turn down the blanket on the bed, and there's a hair on the sheets and some other seriously dubious marks or stains. I don't know what. So after convincing Trav that we really needed to move to a better hotel, by the way, we did stay one night in this hotel and I had to call hotels.com to get it refunded for the other three nights, we get to the better part of this list, which would be one of my honorable mentions, that we stayed at the Traders Hotel in Penang. It was a 5-star hotel, felt completely luxurious after the rough trip we'd had.
Yeah, and I should mention one of the dishonorable mentions that Heather didn't talk about was the Taj Place in Agra, India. And speaking of getting on the phone and getting our money back, we actually walked into this place. There was one person that didn't speak English, just a young guy. He led us into a room. It didn't even seem like it was a guest house, although it was advertised as a guest house. And we had paid for it already, and we walked right out. It was absolutely disgusting. Nothing locked in it or anything like that. Heather got on the cell phone, called up the owner of it, and actually told them that we would call the credit card company and deny the charges if he didn't give us our money back. And then we went down the road, not to the Taj Place, but to a place called the Taj Palace, which is like $5 more and infinitely better. So that's another on our dishonorable mention. As far as honorable mentions for me, you mentioned Heth Traders Hotel in Penang, Malaysia. Do you have another honorable mention?
Yes, actually, the resort that we stayed at for our honeymoon, it was in Riviera Maya, Mexico, and it was an all-inclusive resort. While that's not something we typically do as travelers, I can definitely appreciate why a lot of people choose that for their vacation spot, because it's definitely very relaxing. So I loved that.
Yeah, we were at the Valentine Imperial Maya, if anyone's interested. It was an adults only. It was just a really cool place as an all-inclusive in Riviera Maya. A few of my honorable mentions, the MD House in Chiang Mai, Thailand, probably just because this was a place we went to after the Mojito House, and also because it has a pool shaped like a certain part of the male anatomy. You can't beat that. So MD House in Chiang Mai, really funny place. Balmer's Air Berge in Interlaken, Switzerland. This was the first hostel I'd ever stayed in, as well as a place that advertises having the world's best drinking water. So that still holds a special place in my heart. The Mountain Hostel in Gimmelwald. Gimmelwald's a tiny town above Interlaken of about 80 people in the Swiss Alps. It's like going back in time 400, 500 years. The Mountain Hostel is absolutely awesome. It's the only place to stay in this town, really. And you wake up to fantastic views of the Alps. So we stayed there a few nights. And the last place on honorable mention for me is a place that we just stayed this January. It was a Go With O apartment in Florence. It was run by a lady named Carlotta. It was the perfect location. It was in a beautifully renovated 300-year-old building. Just a really neat apartment to stay in right there in the heart of Florence. So, Heth, now after all that, let's get into our list of the top five accommodations. What's your number five?
My number five is the Lisbon Destination Hostel. Yes, a hostel made it on my list. This hostel was a really incredible place. It is actually a World Heritage Site, and it's in a train station. So the train station is still operating. I believe the train comes in and out quite a few times a day. But they had made this hostel inside, and it's completely soundproofed, so you can't even hear the trains coming and going. The atmosphere in there was really cool. We had a private room, so it was more like staying in, you know, a small boutique hotel. But it was just a really cool experience. I could never say before that I'd stayed in a train station, so...
Yeah, and Lisbon is known for having the best hostels in the world. They're always rated on Hostel World and stuff like that as the best in the world. We're going to get to Lisbon Destination Hostel a little bit on my list as well. We might have some overlap here, guys, but my number five is the Park Inn in Bratislava. So just as crazy as it was that Heather had a hostel on her list, I actually have a hotel on mine. We have a little bit of a different traveling style, but I just really love the Park Inn there. A lot of it was the value. I only used 9,000 Club Carlson points, which is an amazing value. It was buy one, get one free nights with our points. And the coolest thing about it was you were right at the beginning of the old city. I loved Bratislava. I thought it was awesome. And my favorite part was the fact that they had a really nice pool and sauna in the hotel. And as I was swimming laps, every time I looked to my right to take a breath, they had floor-to-ceiling windows. And right up on the hill, you could see the Bratislava Castle. So it was probably the coolest swimming experience I'd ever had. So I really just, it was a... It's a hotel, but it was just a really cool hotel to me, and I just loved the location, and I loved the fact that it had some nice amenities in it. So that was my number five.
And of course, it was free with your points, so...
Yeah, can't beat that value.
Okay, my number four is a place that Trav actually already mentioned. It is the apartment in Florence. So as we've said, a lot of our other trips, we stayed in hostels or guest houses, whether it's a private room or not. But in January, we did 10 days in Italy and we stayed in apartments the whole time. That was a really nice experience for us. And like Travis said, this apartment in Florence was so beautiful. It was quite small, but the owner of the apartment had it so well decorated. Like Travis said, it's a 300-year-old building, beautiful white spaces with, you know, fresh flowers. And she had even left us a bottle of wine and some chocolates. And you walk out the door and you're in the old part of Florence, and you can walk down the street and there's great restaurants, and you can walk a few feet further and there's like the major square and the Uffizi Museum. So the location and the beautiful apartment definitely made this number four on my list.
Yeah, number four for me is called the Canalean in Yokohama. And Yokohama is a big city outside of Tokyo. And we stayed here with some friends. I believe there was eight of us staying here on a trip to Yokohama when we lived in Japan. And the owner of the Canalean, Lee, was also the only person who ever worked there. And he had had this idea. He was a traveler himself. He had this idea of wanting to bring people into Yokohama and show them his hometown. So what he did was he bought an old Japanese house. Usually people buy these old Japanese houses and they just knock them down and put up new ones. What he had done is bought this traditional Japanese house, but reconstructed it piece by piece using some of the original design, did it all with just him and one of his friends building it from their bare hands. Just incredible, incredible woodwork all over the place. An awesome rooftop patio. Lee was an amazing owner. He kept giving us free food and free beer. We were only paying $25 each to stay there, so I don't know how he made any money off of it, because every time we turned around, he was giving us our beer, asking us if we wanted more food or anything like that. But a really, really neat experience. The one downside was the fact that every room, all they had was bunk beds. So, you know, me and Heather stayed there as a couple, and some of our friends were there as couples as well. You know, for 3 days, it was fine. But just a really neat experience. You could see the love and the effort that Lee had poured into this and how much he loved it. So that made it even more special.
Yeah, that really was an amazing place. The wood craftsmanship there was absolutely amazing and not something that you always see in older homes in Japan. Which brings me to my number three. It's also in Japan, which is a little bit surprising that Travis's last one was also there. And mine is Kay's House, which was also, I guess you could call it a hostel, in Ito Peninsula, Japan. So this place was absolutely amazing. Completely traditional Japanese style ryokan, and you walk in the front door and they had remodeled it with stone all through the floor, and there were even like little fountains that were coming through, so there's like water coming alongside the stone, so it's like stepping through a river to get to your traditional tatami mat room with futons on the floor and a little veranda where you can open up the doors, of course the paper sliding doors, and outside is the river in Ito and you can hear it, and it's just so beautiful, and it really felt as much as an authentic experience as you could have in Japan. And it's a place that I will always remember and hopefully go back to one day.
Yeah, it seems like Heather's stealing a few of mine. Speaking of that, the one she mentioned, the Lisbon Destination Hostel, was actually number three for me. She said it's in the old train station that is right in the heart of Lisbon, and it was totally soundproof, which was really cool. It has a unique design in that it's a floating staircases to go up to the second floor, and the owner of it is actually an architect, so he modeled it and built it all himself. And the downstairs lounges are like a kid's fantasy. There's pool tables, there's guitars, there's beanbag chairs, there's hammocks. Everyone's just hanging out. It's just a really, really cool space, super friendly staff. One of the keys that was really neat was not only did they have activities every day, we did a pub crawl, though we were probably the oldest people in the pub crawl at
definitely
that time. But they do all these cool activities. But they also have communal dinners every night. It's €7 a night. They bring in a professional chef every night. They serve you four courses, and it's all you can drink wine for this dinner. So for €7, you're getting, you know, some of the best food, the dinners we had had in Europe, as well as all you can drink wine, and just a cool atmosphere because a lot of the other people from the hostel are eating there as well. So you get to meet people like that. So a very, very cool place. Lisbon has a lot of cool hostels, as I mentioned, but if you are going there, you should check out the Lisbon Destination Hostel. It's also really cheap. I think dorms are $20 a night or less, and our private room might have run us $60 for the whole night or $50 for the whole night for two people. So it's really cheap as well.
Okay, so my number two is in China. We just went to China in February and March. We were there for about 3 weeks, I think. And we stayed in some very interesting places. But one of my favorites was the Giggling Tree in Yangshao, China. We did an excursion where we took a boat down the Li River, and you see all of those iconic karsts, the mountains that stick, you know, out of the water, and it's just so surreal. And it was pouring rain when we did it and a bit chilly, but it actually made the experience even more surreal because there's just mist along all the mountains. And so when we got to the end of that trip, the trip ends in Yangshao, and we went to this place called the Giggling Tree, which is about 10 minutes outside of the city, which is so much nicer because that actual city of Yangshao is a little bit crowded and it's very touristy now. But outside is this gorgeous renovated Chinese farmhouse that this Dutch couple obviously poured in tons of effort and work and love to make it just a beautiful space. And the rooms were really comfortable and they had hot water and flushing toilets. So, I mean, these are all really great things when you're traveling in China. But the best part was definitely, you know, looking out from your room and seeing all of these karsts just shrouded in mist. And it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I can't believe that I actually forgot about the Giggling Tree. That probably would have made my list had I remembered about it. It wasn't even that long ago. As Heather said, it was an old farmhouse, but what it really was about 20 different little residences, like a little community that they had bought all of them. And, you know, basically there were one or two rooms each, and they had combined them to make than these really neat rooms that were all part of this compound. They had great food there, an awesome staff, really friendly. They helped us book all types of different trips, and also the Giggling Tree. We've heard about it from other travelers who actually have read the blog and have listened to the podcast, so it comes highly recommended from us as well as some others. My number two is going to be the Casa dos Guindas. I hope I pronounced that right. It's in Porto, and it has absolutely amazing views over the main bridge, the Dom Luís Bridge, which looks like the Eiffel Tower. If you push the Eiffel Tower over into a bridge over, you know, a river, that's what it would look like. It's an old stone residence converted into five different apartments. So it used to be Alvaro, the owner's wife's family's house. He converted into these five different apartments, all with their own kitchens and bathrooms and stuff like that. Alvaro himself was super pleasant. It's incredible architecture. You combine that with being in one of my favorite cities in the world, in Porto, and just a great location in Porto with awesome views, and it doesn't get much better. So the Casa dos Guindas, we'll link that in the show notes because I actually reviewed it on the blog as well as a few of these other ones. So if you guys are interested, you could check out more about them, and then that has information on how to book it as well. But a really, really cool place in Porto.
I remember that place, and it definitely was an amazing experience to stay there, and it should have made my list as well. But since you mentioned it, I didn't have to. And also, that bridge, actually, the architect who designed the Eiffel Tower designed that bridge, which you didn't mention, but probably had wanted to. And it is a really, really beautiful thing to look out and see that at night with all the lights on.
Yeah. So then, Heth, we're at number one, your favorite accommodation. Go ahead.
Well, of course, being the person that I am, it is a hotel, not a hostel. And it's The Haven in Bali, in Indonesia. This resort, I mean, it wasn't all inclusive, but it was a beautiful hotel resort. And it wasn't on the beach. It was a little bit far removed from the beach. You could walk to the beach in about 10 minutes, or they had, you know, a little car that took you to the beach in 2 minutes. But anyway, the resort was really beautiful. It had three pools. The rooms were very luxurious, really lovely. The cost was one of the best things about it because it wasn't even that expensive.
Yeah, we scored it the first night for about $70 a night. And then the second night, we weren't able to recreate that deal. We were originally going to spend one night there because we got it cheap. And then the second night, we tried to book it, and all of a sudden, it was like $120, which still, for a resort, is pretty cheap. But yeah, that goes to show you how nice Bali is. A resort like that in America or in Canada or any European place would be $500, $600 a night. So you're able to get it somewhere around $100.
And all of you knowing that Travis has some cheap tendencies, the only reason that he agreed to spend two more nights at the price of $120 was for one main reason. Travis?
Yeah, well, this is going to come up again when we talk about foods, but the breakfast buffet, again, I don't usually care about breakfast buffets at hotels. This was amazing. And again, I won't spoil it. I'm sure we'll talk about it a little bit in the food section. That is one reason why I agreed to let us spend an extra night there for sure.
And what's your number one?
My number one, as Heather's already alluded to, is the K's House Ito Onsen. It's a traditional ryokan, which is a Japanese guest house. They've done it up to a T to keep it traditional, but it still has all the modern amenities you could want. We rented a huge room that slept six of us, and they put these futons out on the floor with these huge blankets. It was pretty cold during that time. It kept us incredibly warm. Our huge room had a patio that opened up to the river right there. There was an incredible spa, which is an onsen, is a Japanese spa bath.
Natural.
So natural spring, and it's amazing. It is as traditional as you can get. It's in a really cool area on the Edo Peninsula, which is about an hour, hour and a half from Tokyo. And I should mention too, K's House is a little bit of a chain. I believe they have three or four other guest houses around Japan. We didn't stay at any of those, but all those other ones come highly recommended as well. But this one, K's House Ito Onsen, it takes the cake for me. It was the best accommodations we have been to. Comfortable, fun, unique, and really traditional. And yeah, as Heather says, quite authentic. So those are our five favorite accommodations each. We want to know from you guys what your five favorite accommodations are. Now we're going to jump into one of the best topics when it comes to travel, and that is favorite food. So, Heth, we don't always get good food. Why don't you start off by, I guess, telling us some of the worst meals you've had?
So the worst food, I think we've been pretty lucky that we haven't really ever eaten anything too terrible, including those crickets and silkworms that you ate in Thailand, Trav. But I did have kind of a bad experience. The first time I had this experience, it could have been included in one of my best meals, which is eating on Food Street in Kuala Lumpur. The chicken satay covered in sweet peanut sauce and the spicy fried rice, it's so delicious. So when we returned to KL a year later, we had to go there again. Even though a few of us had been having some intestinal issues in Thailand a couple days before, we went back to Food Street and I think we even ate at the same exact vendor that we had ate at the year past. So I don't know what happened, but about 30 minutes later, I had never been so sick in my life with what I could only assume was food poisoning. I will spare you the gritty details, but it was a pretty bad 24 hours for me. Thank God for Starbucks internationally, because all I ingested for the next 2 days was unsweetened iced passion tea.
Yeah, and I actually don't have an experience like that. I've never gotten food poisoning. I can't actually think of a worst meal that I've had. Usually it comes down to when we try to eat Western food in non-Western places. We tried to get a burrito in Chiang Mai at a place, I think it was called Moe's. It was absolutely awful. But usually it comes, you know, if we're traveling for a while and we want a bit of Western food, we try to get something and it ends up being pretty bad or not up to our standards. But what are a few of your honorable mentions then? Because there's going to be a lot here. And we're cutting it down to our five, but we got to give some honorable mentions.
So I have two honorable mentions, and they're not really a specific dish or a restaurant, but actually two countries. So when we were in Bali, the street food there was so amazing. I don't even know what they call some of the things, but like the fish and the rice that you get. I mean, just all the spices that they use. It's so good. So that was one of my honorable mentions. And then also when we were in Cambodia, we had some amazing food, just really fresh, healthy, filled with really delicious spices and fresh vegetables. So those are my two honorable mentions.
Yeah, I'll give a few of my honorable mentions here. One is a baba in Lijiang, China, which tastes as good as it is fun to say. It's really just a buckwheat pancake, but it seems to have the perfect amount of honey in it, so it's not too sweet, but I just crushed babas the whole time we were in Lijiang, China. I could not get enough of them. They were great. The breakfast buffet that we've kind of touched on already at The Haven in Bali, that was one of the best meals we've had. Didn't break into either of our top five, I don't think, but it was fantastic. It was just a huge spread. The best French toast we've ever had, right, Heth?
Yeah, absolutely. And that breakfast buffet was included in the price of the hotel, which made both of us happy, because sometimes you stay at a really nice hotel and then you have to spend $30 on the breakfast buffet.
Yeah, so for $70 the first night, we probably each ate at least like $30 worth of food from the breakfast buffet. So they're basically paying us to stay there and eat. Another one was, I'm going to murder this because I don't speak French, but La Grenier Alpin, which Heather, I believe, is probably going to talk about later, but a bakery and sandwich shop in Montmartre in Paris. And a few places, I just wanted to mention a few sweets, because none of the sweets made it on here. But we should mention this. I consider myself a little bit of an ice cream connoisseur in the fact that I just love to eat ice cream. Brown's ice cream in York Beach, Maine was always my favorite for a long time. But I do think it's come close to getting supplanted, or maybe was supplanted, by Salt and Straw in Portland, Oregon. So those are 1A and 1B there for ice cream. And that's usually my favorite sweet treat.
Yeah, I have to comment on both of those, because they would have been my top two sweets for sure, because I grew up going to Brown's Ice Cream in Maine. I took Travis there when we were first dating. And I think it's maybe the only reason he loves Maine, because the ocean is sometimes too cold to swim in. So at least there's Brown's. And yeah, Salt and Straw is a bit of an institution on the West Coast. I mean, it's originated in Portland, but I believe they even send some of their products to LA and stuff like that. So if you happen to be in that area, you definitely need to go to Salt and Straw.
Yeah, and they'll let you get as many tastings as you want. So I just sat there and tasted about 15 of the different flavors. So a really cool place. They make their own waffle cones right there too. Just a really neat place. We're looking to go back there when we go to Portland this July. I probably eat there like every night, Salt and Straw. All right, let's talk about actual best foods then. Give us your number five.
My number five is a local place in the Philadelphia suburbs. I think there are about 7 locations. It is a breakfast and lunch spot, and it's called Nudie's. ironically enough. You do not have to be nude to eat there, but the food is just some of the best food. They can't mess it up. Everything you get is delicious. We've taken lots of our friends and new people to the area to this great little spot, and it's just great. It's amazing every time. It's also really cheap. Nothing is over $10. I think most things are $7 for a meal. So.
Yeah, and Nudies, the first time we found it, I actually, when I lived at a big house in college, somewhat of a frat house, some would say, right through our backyard was this little cafe, quaint cafe called Nudies. So we would usually go over there after a long night, maybe, and get some food at Nudies. Meanwhile, there's all these like little ladies who are having their Sunday breakfast, and here we come charging in, about eight of us, just ordering whatever we wanted. So Nudies is a great place. My number five is a place we just ate at on this trip, and that is a place called the Flagship Restaurant, or the easiest way to find it is to ask for the Flagship Restaurant in Bratislava. It's in an old theater. It just feels like what an Eastern European beer hall should feel like. It's this huge, massive theater, open space. They've converted it into a bar. They serve all types of traditional Slovak food. Halusky, which is like small balls of gnocchi and cheese, cream, and bacon. It's as good as it sounds. Also as heavy as it sounds. They also, to kind of counteract the halusky, serve the best grilled vegetables I've ever had in my life. Half liters of beer are about $1. And the crowning glory is the amazing sheep's cheese spread that you can put on bread. I think it's like $1 or $1.50 appetizer. It's a huge ramekin of this sheep's cheese that they mix up. And we ate there 4 times in 4 days. That's how good it was.
Yeah, I still dream about eating that cheese spread with the paprika and the onions on the bread and the $2 glasses of wine. Definitely something that could have made my list, but didn't. So a good mention.
Yeah, and as we said, just mention, it has a different name, but if you ask for the Flagship Restaurant, people will know what you're talking about. And just walk through the theater. It seems very strange, but you'll eventually get to the second deck, and it's just a really cool experience.
Yeah, and the first floor is actually like a wine tasting room, so you can do that, which we didn't do, but sure, it would be fun. Okay, my number four is also a local place outside of Philadelphia in Norristown, PA. It's called Charlie's Pizza.
This is my number four as well, so we'll tag team this one. Go ahead, Heath.
So it's a local institution here. It's pretty gritty. They don't really mess around. They don't have a lot of choices for pizza. It's basically plain meat, tomato top instead of extra cheese or something like that. And it's a little bit like ordering at the Soup Nazi. You just have to go up, tell them what you want. They order it, you pay, you get out. So it's not really a place you want to go on a date or something. But if you want to eat the best pizza in the world, then you have to go here. We've taken a lot of our friends to this local institution, and we've gotten some pretty interesting responses from them.
Yeah, it is the first place we go to every time we get back from traveling. Usually before we actually go home, we'll go right from the airport to Charlie's. They have an awesome cornmeal crust. As I am an ice cream connoisseur, I consider myself also a pizza connoisseur. And there is nowhere like this. We've eaten pizza all over the world. It is the best pizza out there. Some of the things people have said, for example, we took our British friend there, Bobby, and he proclaimed last summer that this pizza is the sex. And I did just read a study that Brits are the least satisfied lovers in the world. But I'm going to go with the fact that he meant it as a compliment.
Yeah. So another one of our friends actually said, what do they put in the sauce? Crack? I just can't stop eating it.
Yeah. So that tells you all you need to know about Charlie's Pizza, which was also my number four. So we had the same number fours there. If you're ever in town, we'll take you to Charlie's Pizza. And it's just a phenomenal, phenomenal place to get what we consider the world's best pizza. And we know, right?
Yeah. We've been to a lot of places. So my number three is actually one that Travis has already mentioned, and that is Le Grenier au Pain. And this shop in Paris, in Montmartre, is just an amazing bakery with delicious baguettes and sandwiches and fruit tarts. And it wasn't just this shop, but basically any baguette shop in Paris where you can just go grab some bread, grab some cheese, grab some meat, grab a bottle of wine, take a picnic. Anywhere you want in the city. And in fact, our last night in Paris, Travis and I biked to the Eiffel Tower at like 10 o'clock at night so that we could get some pictures and videos of it lit up. And we just sat in a park nearby. We were the only ones there, and we're just eating our bread and drinking our wine. So that's a really fun experience, and I would recommend it to anyone.
Heather says any baguette shop, and it's okay. You can go to anyone, but this is the best. We actually got a recommendation from someone who said to us, this was, you know, named the best baguette shop in Paris, and we went there, and it was only half a block from the place we were staying. Coincidentally, it was the best baguette we had tried, and we tried probably at least 10 places over 10 days. The best one for sure. Definitely liked the chicken curry baguette, and as Heather mentioned too, they have amazing fruit tarts as well there. My number three is also a sandwich shop. This sandwich shop is in Florence. We went there 3 times in 3 days. By now, you guys think probably all we ever do is eat when we go, which might be the truth. This is called Al Antico, and it's super simple. You go in, you pick your meat, you pick what veggies or toppings you want to eat, you pick your spread, and they throw it all on massive focaccia bread. All of the ones we got were good, but I think for sure, if you're going there, the pecorino cheese spread was absolutely to die for. So I don't even think it matters what meat or stuff you put on it. They had tons of awesome options, but the pecorino cheese spread made it, and these were €5 sandwiches. They were absolutely massive. If we weren't such gluttons, we probably would have shared it each time. But some of the times we just went and got our own and actually finished it.
That sandwich shop is definitely one of the best places we've ever eaten at. I really enjoyed it as well.
Yeah, and a few readers had recommended it to me when I asked for recommendations, and then I actually saw that it was #1 on TripAdvisor. So obviously, it's not really a place that is unknown by any means, but it's well worth it and a fabulous place. And it's right by the Uffizi, so it's really easy to find.
Okay, and that brings us to my #2, which isn't a specific restaurant, but I would say Thai food in general. We have an amazing Thai restaurant near us in Philadelphia. But what I really want to talk about are the Thai restaurants in Thailand. Now, anywhere you're staying, if you're at the beach, all you have to do is walk down the sandy beaches and there are about 50 restaurants you can just pop into along the way and get some of the best curry or pad Thai. They're all basically the same great homemade local food.
Yeah, and of course, super, super cheap. We're talking, you know, $3-4 at most for a dinner. If you're getting like super fresh fish, even still, it's $3, $4, $5. If you're getting pad Thai or noodle dishes, it can be as low as $2, $3. So absolutely great food in Thailand. My #2, we're not being real specific here. My #2 is an Ubud restaurant, and it's on the island of Bali, but not on the beach. It's in Ubud on the interior, about an hour and a half. I don't know what I ate, and up until today, I actually didn't know what the place was called, but I magically found it. I was able to find it on Google, and it is called Putiri Minang, and it's on the main street in Ubud, right near the post office. I found this place because of another travel blogger, a friend of mine named Kent Foster, who runs a blog called The Drama Maniac. He said this is a great place to go. We actually looked for it in Ubud for about 3 days, and then on the very last night, he had posted a picture of what it looked like to me, and I happened to find it. We had walked by about 5 times. It has a little thing in the front, like a glass front case with just tons of different food. I don't know what it was. You just start pointing to stuff. They pile it high. I had a plate of food that I probably was only able to eat half of, and I think it cost me $2. I actually sat next to a professor from, I think, like the University of Memphis, but his wife and him had gone through Indonesia a lot because of the fact that she did a lot of importing and exporting through there. And he said, every time I come here, I eat here every single night. This is the best restaurant that I've ever been to in the world. And for me, it is #2, but it is fabulous.
Yeah, when we went to this restaurant, Travis picked out all of the things and we shared, and it was so good. And some of the bites we had were so spicy and we had no idea what we were eating, but every bite was just so good. So sometimes you just have to take the plunge and try something new, even if you don't know what it is.
Yeah, just a flavor explosion. And again, super cheap. So if you get something you don't like, which is probably not going to happen, then you don't eat it and it probably costs you 30 cents.
So my #1 shouldn't come as a surprise to people who know me, being that my favorite food is pizza. So my #1 is a restaurant called La Focaccia in Rome, Italy. It is a pizza restaurant, Italian, of course, also has pasta. But when we were there, we went 2 times, actually. We got pizza both times. And Travis doesn't usually like to get pizza with lots of vegetables on it or eggplant, since he doesn't really like eggplant. But I decided to just go for it and get this pizza that had eggplant and ricotta cheese on it, and it was just so good. It was some of the best pizza, and actually a little bit like the pizza we like at home, Charlie's, because it had some cornmeal on the bottom of it, and it was very reminiscent of that, but maybe a little bit healthier because it had less cheese and more vegetables.
Yeah, and La Focaccia had been recommended to us by our host. We were staying at an apartment in Rome, and the host actually said, hey, here's my favorite place to go to get pizza. And we went there twice, like Heather said, and it was fantastic both times. I'm going to cheat here a little bit because I just thought of a place that I didn't put on my list. So I'm going with a 1B and a 1 here. 1B is going to be the frog that I ate in Cambodia. Believe it or not, we had this restaurant. I don't know the restaurant, but they had frog. And they asked me if I wanted a frog, and I didn't really understand if he meant a real frog. I assumed so. It was $1. They brought it out. It was a whole frog fried up and kind of grilled, I guess. It wasn't like deep fried or anything. It was absolutely fabulous. It was seriously one of the, it's number 1B. So it was the best thing I've eaten. It was just so good, unexpectedly good. And I can't really describe it to you. I mean, it kind of tastes like a better kind of moisture chicken. You know, the people we were with actually tried it too and liked it. So the frog, if you have a chance to get frog in Cambodia, it was really, really good. I would take that any day over the silkworm and cricket that I then ate in Thailand. My number one, Heather mentioned this as a worst experience, is Jalan Alor Food Street in Malaysia. Specifically, you know, she mentioned any dish, and I would agree with that. There's just tons of restaurants. There's restaurants behind restaurants and food carts in front of restaurants. You don't even know what you're walking into, but you just walk down and pick up anything you like. Hopefully you don't get food poisoning, of course. My favorite is the, I do like the chicken satay. My favorite is the nasi lemak, which is basically a dish, a traditional dish in Malaysia. It's rice, peanuts, chicken anchovies, an egg, and hot chili sauce. It's like fried anchovies. Again, they just kind of throw this on your plate and then you can mix it together and eat it. It's fantastic. So if anyone is heading that way, we go through Malaysia quite a bit on Air Asia. We find ourselves like stopping in for a day just so we can eat at Jalan Alor. Although last time, that's when Heather got food poisoning. Maybe that trip will stop now.
No, even though I don't have like the stomach of steel that Travis has, I would still be willing to go back and eat there.
Yeah, so some really, really good places. Again, let us know your top five places. As you know by now, if you listen to this, we enjoy eating our way around the world. So if you have top five foods or top five places that you've eaten, make sure you leave the comment on the show notes of this post. Now we're going to get into our top five experiences. And these are a little different than the top five places we've been, because this is more of like, remember when we did that this day, you know, a specific event that we did. We like to say, you know, our top 5 days of traveling. So Heth, why don't you start? I'm sure you have a few honorable mentions. So give us them first and then we'll get into it.
Before I get into my honorable mentions, I have to talk about one of my experiences that was a little bit the worst experience. I feel as though nothing we have gone through retrospectively has really been that bad. As every travel experience you have, whether it's good or bad, can allow you to grow or change in some way. So that's why one of my worst travel experiences also makes it into my top five best experiences. And that would have to be Mumbai, India. The whole country of India is a vast area with lots of beautiful spaces, but there are a lot of really challenging parts to this country. When we arrived in Mumbai, we were meeting a friend, staying with a friend there who is in the U.S. Foreign Service. So he met us at the airport, picked us up. We took a taxi. We drove through the slums to get to his high-rise apartment. And just the whole experience in Mumbai was very challenging for me, especially as a woman. The way that I dressed, no matter what, my blonde hair, the men would stare at me. It was very uncomfortable. I didn't exactly feel safe. So I felt very challenged in this environment, as I know Travis did. But one of my best travel experiences actually happened in India. So we'll get to that in a little bit.
Yeah, we should mention, I don't really have, I guess, what would be a worst experience. India was by far the most challenging, and Mumbai, because we flew into there, the most challenging part of India. I wouldn't go back right away. Let's just put it that way. I will say we've had some mishaps. We could kind of tick them off a little bit. Heather and I both got in motor scooter accidents within a day and a half of each other. I crashed my bike, basically gave myself road burn all down my right side. And then a day and a half or 2 days later, Heather crashed her motorbike into barbed wire, requiring stitches at a Thai hospital with geckos running all around it. So that was quite the mishap. We got stuck in Singapore one time when my passport was too full and they wouldn't let us on the airplane. So we've certainly had our fair share of mistakes or goofy things we've done. But all in all, I think that is what makes travel travel and what makes some of these amazing experiences even more amazing. And these are stories in hindsight that are pretty funny. So Heather, what are some of the honorable mentions?
So we have been lucky enough and blessed enough to go on a lot of really fun drives along the ocean. And so two of my honorable mentions are the coastal drive of the Pacific Coastal Highway in California and the Great Ocean Road along the southern coast in Australia. And then on another note, more of the adventure side of our travel was paragliding in Japan right next to Mount Fuji. Travis thought he might be a little scared because he doesn't love heights too much, but we just jumped right off that mountain in tandem with a professional. But it was just an amazing experience to be floating above the ground like that. And also ziplining in Thailand, both really fun adventures.
Yeah, a few of my honorable mentions. Heather did mention that we love driving. I love biking around. I think those are just really cool ways to see places. So driving through the Cotswolds in England was a really cool experience, even though I did kind of scrape the car up a little bit in Bath. No big deal. Biking around Kyoto one night, we just had these bikes that came with the hotel we were renting or staying in, and we were biking through Gion, so we saw geisha and stuff like that. Really, really cool. The Great Wall of China was awesome. Although it was a little foggy the day we were there, but a really neat experience. Scuba diving on the Great Barrier Reef just missed my list. And biking through Paris at night, as Heather kind of touched on the last night we had in Paris during this trip, was really cool. All of those, all my honorable mentions. So obviously, we've been very fortunate. If those are only honorable mentions, to see some really, really cool stuff. What's your number five, Heather?
My number five, it took place in Hokkaido, Japan, which is the most northern island of Japan. We went to the snow festival there, the Yuki Matsuri in Sapporo. And this was just a really cool experience for us. We went with a lot of other English teachers, so we had a big group going. Of course, it was freezing, but being from the East Coast, you know, we get a lot of snow there. So for us, it wasn't that big of a deal. But some of our friends, you know, don't get snow like some of our Australian friends that were with us. So just to see the scale of some of these sculptures that people build with ice and snow, they had a whole temple built, a Japanese style temple built from ice and, you know, Super Mario Brothers and other really cool sculptures. So that was a really fun trip that we had while we lived in Japan.
I forgot an honorable mention real quick. The Kentucky Derby. If you have a chance, go to the Kentucky Derby. It was really cool. It doesn't have to be for a bachelor party like mine was, but just go. Really great time. My number five is the Palace of Sintra, which is located outside of Lisbon. If you stay in that Lisbon destination hostel, the train that runs from there goes to the Palace of Sintra. So you can just walk right out and get on the train and go. Just a really, really neat, cool place. We didn't know what to expect. We got there. We had a rental car, so you just keep driving up this winding road. It feels like you're in like Lord of the Rings or something. It's just all these overgrown, lush forests. And then you get up to this palace that basically is a guy's idea of what he wanted a palace. So it's all these different styles combined together. But just a really interesting, really unique place. You know, I didn't have any expectations from it, and I was blown away by it. So the Palace of Sintra, definitely worth a visit if you're in that area, if you're near Lisbon. Super easy to get to, cheap to go into, and just a really cool place. There's a lot of ruins around that you can walk around and see, too. It's not just the palace. We didn't have time to do all that. We just hung out in the palace.
Yeah, Sintra was a really cool castle. Lots of colors and lots of different architecture all melded into one huge palace. So definitely a must-see destination. My number four was the Lee River, which I mentioned when we stayed at the Giggling Tree in Yongshao, China. When we took the boat down the river, it was something that I didn't expect to be so amazing. This trip to China was kind of Trav's idea, and I tagged along in the end. I was thinking about not even going. And when we had this experience, I was just so overwhelmed with how beautiful it was and how I felt transported into a completely different world that was so different from anything I'd ever seen. Then when we stayed at the Giggling Tree, we rented bicycles and we just biked around the rivers and around the karst and saw all these little villages. And it was just such an amazing day that I will always, always remember.
Yeah, we'll be getting to that for me a little later. My number four, I explain it like this to people. I say, you know, when you have expectations of a thing and it's really, really high and you think, all right, there's no way this is going to meet those expectations, and then it absolutely shatters them. That happened with the Kentucky Derby for me. That also happened with my number four, which is Oktoberfest. So when I was living in Switzerland, we decided last minute we were going to rent a van. There were seven guys and we were going to drive up to Munich and we were going to go to Oktoberfest. We did not have a place to stay. I booked a place like the night before at this weird apartment through Craigslist, which actually turned out to be pretty cool. Not a cool apartment. It was pretty crappy. It could have made my worst list, but we got it for $20 a person. Really neat. And Oktoberfest itself, I mean, everyone knows it's a big party, but what I didn't realize is just how much fun everyone's having. It's not a party where everyone gets drunk and gets mad and angry. It's like all these Germans and people from all over the world get drunk or buzzed and are just having so much fun. The food is amazing. Obviously, the beer is really good, but it is the people and the experiences and, you know, you're just there. I didn't know that they had huge roller coasters and those carnival swings in the Oktoberfest grounds, which is a little weird because these swings are like 50 feet off the ground as you're swinging through, and people who have drank like four or five beers that day or six or seven or whatever are on them. So you don't want to stand underneath them, but just a really, really neat experience. If anyone has an opportunity to go, it'll probably exceed your expectations as it did mine.
Well, I never went to Oktoberfest, so I can't attest to how great it is. But my number three is what I mentioned in my kind of best and worst experiences, and that would be India. Not really Mumbai, but actually the state of Rajasthan in northwestern India is so beautiful. We went to the Taj Mahal, and it was, of course, everything that you would expect to see. That's over in Agra, more in central India. And, well, I'm not saying you should skip it. You shouldn't. You should see it because it's iconic. What I really enjoyed was going to the different cities in Rajasthan. They are these beautiful, well-preserved royal homes of the families. They're not royal anymore, but it used to be the palaces and homes of the royal families who ruled India. And we went to Jaipur and Jaisalmer and Udaipur and Jodhpur and all these really cool places. We went to a textile mill in Jaipur. Jaipur is an area where they do a lot of textiles, screen printing, a lot of local artisans and crafts there. We went to a restaurant and our tuk-tuk driver told us about a vendor who sold things for anthropology. And imagine my surprise. Of course, I love anthropology. Didn't realize a random cab driver in India would know anthropology. So after dinner, he took us to the actual vendor and I got to see some of the bedspreads and different textiles that they send to anthropology. So just being there and having all these great experiences, even though the country itself is challenging, is something that I will always remember and try to urge myself to have maybe more difficult experiences for the greater reward.
Another mishap as we are riding camels through the desert around Jaisalmer. They say, well, it has not rained here in 3 months. And right after he says that, a huge sandstorm comes and pouring rain, just sheets of rain. We are getting soaked. We are getting crushed with sand. And they're telling us, well, we can't walk the camels back. We have to get them in. We can't be out here with them. So they have us hoofing it with these camels, galloping. You can imagine. Galloping isn't fun on a horse. It's way less fun on a camel. Yeah. So another mishap, but a really funny experience there. We were shaking sand out of ourselves for like 10 days because we were just covered head to toe in sand. My number three, Heather mentioned it on her honorable mentions. I'm putting these two together. I'm cheating again of my own system, driving the Pacific Coast Highway and the Great Ocean Road. I love driving. I love getting out and just being able to stop when you want and taking pictures and seeing a small town and turning in. And I just think driving is a really cool way to see different areas that you wouldn't get by, you know, flying or anything like that. So, or tour bus. Yeah. So we did it down the Croatian coast just a week ago. That was really cool. But the Pacific Coast Highway and the Great Ocean Road, both are very similar. You're just seeing these vistas and you pull off and then you go around a bend and the next one's even prettier and the next one's even prettier. So it's a really cool experience. Don't expect, you know, if it says on Google Maps, it'll take you 3 hours. Expect it to take you at least three times that because you're going to be stopping, taking pictures everywhere. Both those roads are fantastic. So if you have a chance to do it, the Pacific Coast Highway out in California or the Great Ocean Road, basically you can go Melbourne all the way to Adelaide if you want. We went to Port Campbell, not all the way to Adelaide, but just really, really cool driving experiences, really beautiful roads.
Those were definitely some of the best trips we've had. So my number two is actually in Australia, and that is the Great Barrier Reef. We went to Cairns, Australia. We stayed there for, 4 or 5 days. And we splurged and did an amazing excursion out to the Great Barrier Reef. We went with a small crew, maybe 70 other people or something, but the idea was to just scuba dive or snorkel on the Great Barrier Reef. Well, we went to this part that is not as touristed, so the reef is supposed to be more pure and less damaged. And Travis was like, yeah, I'm definitely going to scuba dive. Well, not everybody knows this about me because I love the ocean and I love swimming. I don't really like deep water. I get a little anxious thinking about what's lurking underneath there. So when I snorkel, I sometimes get anxious until I actually pop my head under the water and I can see what's under there and I feel more comfortable. So I assume there's no way I'm going to scuba dive because I will just be too afraid to get down there and worry about my oxygen levels. But I don't know why, while we're getting the tutorial about what we want to do, because they have to, of course, give you some guidelines and rules. At the last minute, I was like, okay, fine, sure, I'm going to do it. I'm going to go down there and I'm going to scuba dive. So Travis and I both went with a guide, and it was actually...
And Heather knocked out my windpipe, or my air pipe, so I was scrambling under the water trying to find it. I thought I was going to die.
Oh, for heaven's sake. He's so dramatic. The guy just like put it over his arm and popped it back in his mouth. No harm, no foul. Anyway, it was a very amazing experience for me because I thought I would be way too afraid to do it. And I'm pretty adventurous in most other cases of my life. So I'm glad that in the end, I actually did it. And it was such a surreal experience to be under the water. I don't know if many of you have scuba dived, but it's so calm. It's so peaceful. And you just feel like a fish because you're swimming around and you can see all these other fish and you can breathe normally. So there's no, you know, pressure to get back to the top when you're snorkeling and the water is getting in your mouth and it's just uncomfortable. So that was my top two experience.
Yeah. And the Great Barrier Reef, definitely expensive, but it's like being in Finding Nemo. You're seeing the turtles, the little Nemo fish, whatever they're actually called. You can do scuba diving a lot cheaper, obviously, in Thailand, which we haven't done yet. But yeah, Great Barrier Reef was once-in-a-lifetime experience, probably because it's so expensive. My number two is, and I always thought this would be my number one, and it is right there, but is Angkor Wat in Cambodia, a phenomenal place. If anyone has a chance to get there, if you're in the region, you have got to go to Siem Reap. You've got to go to Angkor Wat. It's an amazing complex. You can buy a 1 or 3 day pass. You could easily spend 3 days there. We only did 1 day. We saw the three main temples, the Tomb Raider temple, the main one, and the other one. It's fabulous because they let you go anywhere you want. So you can climb over all the ruins. It's not roped off like a few of, you know, a lot of the new monuments or a lot of the places that a lot of tourists go are now roped off, but Angkor Wat is still hidden enough, I guess, that they let you do it. So I would suggest that people go there before, you know, it even becomes more and more touristy because you're still allowed to do a lot of cool stuff that you wouldn't be able to do at a lot of other, you know, international monuments. It's just a really fabulous place. I don't really know what to say other than everyone should go there. It blew our minds. It was amazing. I think it's $20 for a 1 day pass, which, you know, in Cambodia is a fortune, but still it's well worth it. It's just a phenomenal place. And I know that that is probably on your list too.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to take a page from Travis's book and do a 1B and a 1. So my 1B was actually being in Ubud in Indonesia, as we've talked about before, in Bali, just one of my favorite places. And one day Travis and I rented a scooter, and this was only 4 months after we had both crashed our scooters. So we were a little bit gun shy. In this case, we just rented one scooter and we drove on it together. So Travis was pretty nervous to be the one in control of that situation, but it ended up fine. We had no major accidents. And what we ended up doing is just driving through the mountains in Ubud and seeing all these terraced rice paddies in the mountains and, you know, stopping off and taking pictures. And it was just such a beautiful experience because the agriculture there and the views that you can find are just something that you can't find in America. So,
yeah, and we talked about Angkor Wat. You're allowed to do whatever you want. Well, in Ubud, I mean, they have temples and stuff that no one's even around. So we just would go down to this temple, this huge complex. There'd be no one around. You can just hang out. You can walk all the way down into the rice fields. You can do, like we said, whatever you want, and there's no one around. So it's just a really surreal experience because you're seeing what life was like way back when, and there's not a lot of people around to bother you and stuff like that. So a really cool, authentic experience.
Yeah, and actually that same day we were scooting around, Travis, do you remember that guy who had the big, huge bottle of spring water on his head?
Yeah, it was a local guy. Well, he wasn't a guide. He was just going to get 5 gallons of spring water for his family. Actually, 10 gallons, but in 5 gallon drums. And he led us down this back path for like 10 minutes.
Down the mountain.
All the way down to these rice fields, and then he showed us this natural spring where he's going to get the water. Then we had to climb all the way back up, and it was muddy, so we were struggling. Here was this guy who was climbing up barefoot, balancing a 10-gallon or a 5-gallon jug of water full on his head, making us look like fools because we were just trying to scramble up in shoes and, you know, without a 5-gallon thing on our head, and he just walks right up the side of the mountain. So really, really neat, authentic experiences, as we said.
So that was my 1B, and my number one is Angkor Wat, and as Travis mentioned, it's such an immense complex, this whole park, national park of Cambodia. You can spend days and days there. And unfortunately, we were only in Siem Reap for two nights, maybe two full days. So it was a really quick trip tacked on at the beginning of the Thailand and then Malaysia. So I would love to go back and just be able to spend 3 full days discovering each part of the park and seeing all of the other ruins of the temples. And like Travis said, you definitely have to get to this place because it is just such an amazing experience.
Yeah, it is the coolest monument that we've ever seen, both of us. We've said that to this day. My number one is going to be biking around Yangshuo in China. Heather touched on it a little bit, but we just had a fabulous day. We rented bikes from the Giggling Tree. We took them out. They gave us this book with these pictures on it of how to take this really scenic route. And we just biked through these old villages that's like how China used to be. I mean, it's rural China, through all these rice paddies and everything. You know, we'd bike through this town of 10 people and they'd all come out and look at us because who are these 3 white people biking through town? We were with a friend of ours. You know, we biked by a guy who was holding up a chicken by the neck, and when he saw us, he got like so excited, or he thought it was so funny that he just sliced the chicken's neck off and was holding it up and yelling at us. And, you know, you have all the karsts in the background, which are those limestone mountains that rise right out of the fields. And it really felt, as our buddy mentioned, that we were in Jurassic Park at different times. You're in these surreal landscapes, and we hiked to the top of one of the karsts. Me and Heather got to the very, very top. It was like being on top of the world, and just amazing, amazing experience. And just one of those days where you look at it and you think, this is what travel is all about. And you didn't know that you were going to experience it before you even got there. It wasn't like you were looking forward to it where you said, I'm going to go see Big Ben or I'm going to go see the Eiffel Tower. It was one of the things that happened spontaneously and turns into be what I consider the best travel day we've ever had in our life.
Yeah, I had that at number 4, but maybe I should have moved it up to number 1 as it was that great.
Yeah, so lots of awesome memories as well as some funny ones. Heth, thanks for coming on once again. I owe you some wine now at the wine bar. It was really fun to have you on. I just hope that you now don't take my job as the host of this podcast.
I think you're set there.
Well, there you have it, guys. Our top 5 accommodations, our top 5 foods, and our top 5 travel experiences. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, we want to know about your favorites. So please go on over to the show notes and tell us your top 5 accommodations, foods, and travel experiences. Heth and I need more motivation to plan even more trips. You can get to the show notes by going to extrapackofpeanuts.com/pods, P-O-D-S. Then find the link for episode 40. That'll take you to the show notes. You can also go through all the links of the places that we talked about if you're interested in booking some of these accommodations or finding some of these restaurants. And then in the comments, just put your comments. Tell us your top 5. We look forward to hearing your favorites. Also, if you're interested in checking out the Paradise Pack and learning more, don't forget to head over to theparadisepack.com and leave us your email address. That way, you'll get notified as soon as the pack goes live and ensure that you won't miss the 72-hour sale window. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. And until next week, happy free travels.